Flavor is everywhere.
From text to mechanics.
Spicy pulls.
Salty plays.
The sweet taste of victory.
And the bitter sting of defeat.
It can lead to sour faces.
And umami friendships.
But all these flavors bring people together.
For a gathering.
A potluck of creativity, skill, and above all,
magic.
Well, howdy and welcome to Flavor Profiles. I'm Matt.
And I'm Nat.
And if you haven't figured it out by now, we are going to be doing a set review for Outlaws of Thunder Junction this episode. Yee, and might I add ha.
We're rootin' and tootin'.
So mosey on to grab a nice beverage and sit a spell, and we're going to kind of give a little bit of a rundown of what we like, what we don't like, and what we wish maybe there was more of.
Yeah.
So Matt, you haven't gotten to do pre-release for this, have you?
Yeah, I've only played a couple of the pre-cons. I played Olivia and Yuma, so the Mardu and the Naya decks I've tried, but...
I picked up the Naya one. That was my my pity pack to myself for only winning one round, and... it was not a respectable win. So I'm just going to give myself that. And then I have the Is It one on the way, which I'm kind of curious to check out and have a few ideas for some modifications. The last one, though, I believe it's Gonti. Mm-hmm. That one, I'm one of my friends who invited me last night, who's a huge limited player, but not a commander player, goes, I think I'm going to buy this. I think you've converted me to commander. I like stealing things.
Nice. Yeah, that feels fair.
Now maybe I can get better at building decks for limited, because I realize I build them like I build a commander deck. When I started looking at it last night, I was like, yeah, this could work, and nothing really happens till drop Marchesa, and I was like, oh god, that's my commander. Oh, I'm hosed.
Yeah, you gotta play a little bit quicker.
Yeah, I'm trying. I'll get better. I'll try and be a threat. I'll try and be at least above a level one threat.
Today we wanted to talk about, it's our flavor review of Outlaws of Thunder Junction. So what kind of thing do we want to start with? Do we want to start with the lore, the story? Do we want to start with some of the mechanics? Do we want to start with some of the cards?
I mean, there's so much to go through because the set is massive in a mm-hmm. way. I mean, it's kind of three separate things. They did some interesting little tweaks because you have the main set, the breaking news, which is sort of the list for this mm-hmm. set, the big score that was the repurposed epilogue, and then the cards for commander that were new to it with the story.
I liked how they did sort of like the villains getting together, you know, it felt like fun. There were a couple, I don't know if loopholes is the right word, but there were a couple holes in the story that I know other people noticed, like how this plane just seemingly kind of came out of nowhere and there was mm-hmm. no backstory to it. And which does kind of play into that theory we had of these are just kind of like dreams or, you know, stories that we're going through. So, you know, you don't necessarily have to have planes that have backstories or.
I mean, I think we'll get a little bit more insight into the plane itself as we move forward, especially the log story that they gave us.
Which. How do I put this? I didn't love the epilogue story.
There's nothing wrong with that.
It felt like a cop out. Like it felt like.
In which part? All of it? Anything in particular?
All of it. The whole Vraska and Jace deciding to adopt this strange furry creature, and that was the thing inside of the vault that everyone was trying to get. Like, I just I don't know how I feel about that.
It's like there's part of it I really liked. I really think some of the insight into Jace and Jace's family and sort of I missed out on, which sent mm-hmm. me digging back through a lot of the older stories. And I thought that was kind of an interesting take, but it was a very quick wrap up. And some of it did kind of come out of nowhere with the creation or with the introduction of Loot, who is adorable. I won't discount that. But I'm really wondering if this is something that's going to get a bigger payoff later on.
I don't know. It just felt disappointing, kind of. It was like, oh, we're all trying to get into this vault for this creature that Jace and Vrasko want to adopt. Like, it feels weird. Like, it doesn't feel...
Dream.
It felt like a different story, you know? Like, mm-hmm. it felt like it was... I did like kind of getting insight into Jace and Vrasko, and yes, they did allude to some strange... things that we won't talk about. But you all, I'm pretty sure you all know what we're talking about. diving deep into their relationship. And I was okay with the fact that, you know, they were like, oh yeah, like we should adopt. Like that was cool. I liked that part. Mm-hmm. But I didn't like the part that it all came back to what was in the vault, which was Loot. And it was like, you know, I feel like it would have been cooler if, you know, they had been like, oh, let's adopt Kellen. Like, you know, Kellen kind of like met Oko and it was kind of like, okay, like, I guess related. And there wasn't like this, you know, it wasn't like big, happy family reunion. Like, it would have been kind of cool if they're like, oh, you know, like, you know, Kellen, we've seen him fight. He's like kind of like this cool kid. Like, we should adopt him. Like, that would make more sense to me than the weird creature in mm-hmm. the vault. And nothing against Loot. I think Loot as a character is adorable, like you said. It just mm-hmm. didn't feel like the right time or place for this to happen.
You know, thinking back to the story while we're talking about it, what immediately is kind of coming to mind, because Loot is, I guess, a living map of the multiverse somehow. Mm-hmm. And Jace is able to see how all of the omen paths connect. It reminds me very much like we're going to get... Did you see Guardians of the Galaxy 3?
I did.
We're about to have a Rocket Raccoon backstory.
Oh, gosh. I will say I've never... That's not true. I have cried more during a movie, but I cried so much during that movie with the raccoons, and it was so sad, and I don't want to relive that, so...
Yeah, that was a hard one for me. When I watched, I was not expecting that when I started watching it, but it kind of... feels like there could be we're gonna have to get Loot's backstory at some point. Like, yeah. Why does Loot have this information? Why was Loot locked in the vault? And that's the first thing that kind of came to mind for me. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, I don't like that that is what came to mind for.
Yeah. I mean, I guess that makes sense, but like, I still don't love that story and how it ended.
Yeah, I can't agree with that. I thought it was beautifully written.
Going back.
You were talking villain side of the story and how that was kind of fun.
Yeah, so we saw a lot of like returning characters. They were all sort of the villains, quote unquote, of their stories. So, I mean, you had like Olivia who showed up. You had Ariette from Eldraine mm-hmm. who showed up. You know, you had Jason Vraska show up, who the last time we saw them, they were Phyrexianized and on the bad guys' side. A bunch of other characters.
And then we had more pop up in the cards too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Lots of sort of they really embrace, like, you know, that sort of old Western idea of where, like, almost a lot of people compared this to like Borderlands, if you've played the video game Borderlands, mm-hmm. or almost like Mad Max, like, where it's a Western, but it's like mostly more of like villain kind of outlaw, you know, mm-hmm. Like we said, crime. So.
And that reflects a lot in the mechanics, too, mm-hmm. because we had sort of the villainous side of the party mechanic in a way. Mm-hmm. We had sprees and crimes, plots. Mm-hmm. It's like everyone gets to live their...
Everyone's in their villain era right now.
And it's fun.
It's fun. Yeah, so that's kind of cool. You know, going through the cards, I want to bring this up because when I saw this card, I was like, okay, someone in the dev team for this set has to play Overwatch or be an Overwatch fan, because there are so many like Cassidy parallels, similarities. Cassidy is the cowboy in Overwatch, mm-hmm. Whose ult is literally called High Noon, and the card almost looks like Cassidy like ulting High Noon. So
I just googled the character.
Yeah.
And then the card.
The voice actor for it is Matt Mercer, who, you know, does D&D stuff as part of Critical Role. And so there were so many parallels that I was like, and I thought it might have been Daniel Holt, because Daniel plays Overwatch. But Daniel pled the fifth, thought it was not him. So, you know, I got to give props where props are due. Someone was... did their research and was like, okay, this is cool. Go ahead.
I'm wondering if, was it Eduardo Francisco, the artist, is an Overwatch player, or maybe the art director. I just looked to see what other cards they've done, and they've only done four, all for Outlaws of Thunder Junction. Mm-hmm. So, but I don't know enough about Overwatch to see if there's enough references in there.
Yeah, I'll have to go through and look at the other ones. I will say, as someone who lives in the West, I live in Colorado, a lot of like the art direction is very like on point and accurate, as mm-hmm. well as like some of the creatures. Specifically thinking about like there's the prairie dog one.
Mm-hmm.
I remember when I first moved here, they've since like relocated a lot of them because they kept getting hit by cars. Mm-hmm. But there were prairie dogs everywhere when I first moved here. Like they were everywhere, but they kept, like I said, they just kept getting hit by cars. Like, so they ended up like relocating a lot of these prairie dogs. So they're like less, you see them less, you know, used to mm-hmm. see them as like just along, like while you were driving, like along mm-hmm. the roads, like they were everywhere, but you don't see them as much anymore now. But
so it was kind of the same for me. I grew up in San Antonio, Texas. So we had all of the stereotypes of the West and of cowboys. So all the movies have shoved at me, all the books made fun of because I was born in New York City. So I was always an outsider. But looking at this set, seeing the tumbleweed references, the uh-huh. armadillos, even the, it's just, they did a good job with hitting and then adding a little bit of magic to it.
Yeah.
As you were going through the cards and kind of seeing this, were there any legends that really...
You know, I really like the new Geralf. I think that's a cool card. We see Geralf and Giza? Mm-hmm. Giza? I don't know how to pronounce her name.
I've always said Giza.
Giza.
Someone will correct us in the comments.
Yeah, they're back. But the card is like really, really good. But also, you know, I've always kind of liked his cards. And this mm-hmm. one is like no exception. So this one's, whenever you cast a spell during your turn other than your first spell that turn, create a 2/2 blue and black zombie rogue creature token. Whenever a zombie enters the battlefield under your control, put a +1/+1 counter on it for each other zombie that entered the battlefield under your control this turn. So it's kind it's kind of like a stormy card, but like mm-hmm. also could be really good if you're playing zombies.
It's a good one too if you're plotting spells,
mm-hmm.
because it'll count as a free cast if you're a little low on mana for anything mm-hmm. else.
Yes.
Like, funny enough, one that really jumped out at me, Giza, and I love whenever you commit a crime, create 2/2 blue and black zombie rogue creature, which really matches up with how Gisa acts in the story and just constantly wanting to commit crimes and just raise the dead. But both of those cards are going to be great together if you're going Dimir with zombies. But I, you know, looking at Geralt again, it's a good card.
And I know why they didn't do this, but it would have been really cool to have them have partner with each other. Mm-hmm. And especially like partner feels on theme for this set, you know, like howdy partner, like
I'm shocked they didn't do that in this set.
Yeah, there's no partners.
It would have been a flavor win. It would have been funny, but you know, I guess it is really expected too.
Yeah, like I said, I get why they did it. It would have been kind of cool.
I'd rule zero it.
Yeah, you think so?
Oh yeah, if anyone wanted to play the two of them together, I'd totally be okay with that, because I feel anyone who put the time into making a deck around those two cards together could be kind of fun.
Maybe I'll rule zero that deck.
I would happily die to it.
Okay. I mean, and I think it's fine because Geralt doesn't cost much. He's only 3 mana, but Giza's like 5 mana.
5 cost.
So, I mean, you're not getting these out like super quick anyways. So I think you could probably get away with.
Oh, yeah. It could
doing the two work of them separate. But the other one I was thinking about, and it's actually the commander of the Naya deck, Yuma, Proud Protector. The other one that comes in the deck that can possibly Kiri, Talented Sprout. Yeah, so Kiri, Talented Sprout, Naya, and a colorless. Other plants and tree folk you control get +2/+0 at the beginning of your post-combat main phase. Return target plant, tree folk, or land card from your graveyard to your hand.
Oh, there's going to be a lot of support because there's a lot of plants. Mm-hmm. But this is perfect to go digging back into Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, exactly. Like, there's some really good tree folk in Lord of the Rings. No, I really like this card, and the creature on it is adorable.
Mm-hmm. It's a little flower bow.
And, you know, people have kind of been comparing like Yuma and Kiri to like the Mandalorian with Mando and Grogu. Mm-hmm. And so Kiri would be like little Grogu. And I just think that's adorable.
Oh, someone's going to do an altered pair of those soon, I bet.
Oh, yeah, for sure. If someone hasn't already.
I love that. I hadn't heard that comparison yet until tonight.
Yeah. Yeah, because Yuma's kind of, it's Yuma Proud Protector. And just like the way like he's holding the sprouts gives off like, you know, dad vibes. And so that's why people are comparing it, I think, to like Pedro Pascal and the Mandalorian. And obviously the sprout is green, so it's like kind of like Grogu-esque. So yeah, I think that would be fun to build some plant and tree folk.
I kind of want to feel like that's, that deck.
Yeah, because I feel like that's not a kindred deck we see much of. So I think it would be cool to do that. Not like I need another Naya deck, but
that seems to be the thing everyone said over the past 3 months. I don't need another Naya deck, but
they keep coming out with really good Naya cards. I don't, I can't help myself.
I really want to build a Naya deck kind of rooted in this, and maybe leverage Hazazon, but do it riffing on Treasure of the Sierra Madre. Because we now have more deserts.
Yes.
In this, which is going to be great for Hazazon. And the idea of you have characters that are constantly digging to find treasure. So I haven't figured out how I want to focus it or who I really like, obviously in the lead or buried inside is one of the characters. But I love just looking through the deck stock. It seems like a lot of fun and I'm really inspired me.
Yeah.
Especially with all the callbacks. And like you mentioned, like plants and tree folk support, getting that.
Yeah. Are there any other ones? Any other legendary creatures that kind of stuck out to you?
So last night I pulled a Marchesa, Dealer of Death. And that was just a fun kind of card to have in there when committing crime. Because whenever you commit a crime, you pay one, look at the top two cards in your library, one into your hand, one in the graveyard. I was able to leverage I believe it was Rakdos joins up the enchantment, which is a five drop. But when you play it, you can bring back a creature card from your graveyard with two additional 1/1 counters on it. Mm-hmm. And that was kind of nice. It just ended up being fun. I was able to leverage Vial Smasher a lot, though.
Okay.
Because that's anytime an outlaw enters under your control, it does one damage to target opponent. And there were enough legends to kind of mess with to where it was fun. What about Calamity, Galloping Inferno? Hmm. While saddled, choose a non-legendary creature that saddled it this turn and create a tapped and attacking token that's a copy of it. Sacrifice that token at the beginning of the next step. Repeat this process once. And it has a saddle of one. It sounded like a bunch of people pulled this last night, and anyone who was using it, they were winning games with it.
Yeah, it seems pretty good. The other one that just seems really broken is the new Ghirid, Mirror of the Wilds. It's literally just Naya, 3/3 haste. Non-token creatures you control have tap. Create a token that's a copy of target token you control that entered the battlefield this turn. This card is disgusting, and people are going to do disgusting things with it. I already know. My first thought when I saw this was like, oh my gosh, I can make double the amount of Bloodforged Battle Axes. But people aren't on the same brainwave as me. They're going to be like, oh, let's make a copy of this Blightsteel Colossus, you know? Mm-hmm. So I'm excited about the card, but also not, because I know people are going to do ridiculous things with it.
Isn't there an axe in the art?
Oh, I don't know. Maybe. I know the other one that people are also really excited about is Obeka.
Mm-hmm. I pulled one of those. I ended up not using it because I didn't have anything that would be triggered by it. Mm-hmm. They're excited for it. Getting an extra upkeep. I was immediately thinking back to some of the Doctor Who cards.
Yeah.
That one will be fun. A lot of people were looking forward to Roxanne, Starfall mm-hmm. Savant. Cat druid with the meteorite tokens, which when I first saw that one previewed, I was kind of like, this one sort of came out of nowhere.
Yeah. Yeah. Also, another one is Vihan Goldwaker. That's the one that your treasures can become assassins. Mm-hmm. And then other outlaws you control have vigilance and haste. So, you know, if you're trying to play treasures, that one be quite good.
I had fun last night with Fibblethip Lost on the Range.
Yeah. I don't know if you've seen them play their deck yet, but Chase Manicures built mm-hmm. a Fibblethip Lost on the Range deck, and it is, like, insane. It is so good. It is...
Oh, I know they were building it, and they were ridiculous. Really excited, but I haven't seen the list, and I only just... threw it in last night as, okay, I can get a sense of what's coming up next with it. Mm-hmm. But there were a few times I was able to plop that. I mean, they didn't win me a game, but they got me close.
Yeah.
I really am going to have to check out their list after we're done.
Yeah. And maybe like watch a vlog, a VOD or two, because I know they've been playing it a lot on stream. So definitely go check it out, because it is every time I went on stream and Chase was playing Fibblethip, it was like just so much going on.
Plot gets out of control really fast.
Yeah.
If you time it right.
That's what we're learning.
And I am going to have a lot of fun with that. I'm going to build an Is It plot deck, which could be fun, hopefully, if it works out. We'll see.
Were there any other cards, maybe not necessarily legendary creatures, but other cards that kind of stood out to you for this set?
Yeah, there were a handful of cards, like some of the commons and uncommons.
I preach this every set. You know, I decide kind of personally if I'm going to invest in a set based on the commons and uncommons. Mm-hmm. Because rares and mythics, like I can always buy singles of those, you know. Mm-hmm. And so for those, like, I'll just buy the singles. But if the commons and uncommons of a set are really good, I invest into that set. I buy like a box so I can open. So I have some of that bulk because those commons and uncommons I know are going to be super useful in the future. So, you know, that's kind of like what I do. And so this set had some quite good commons and uncommons, although there are a lot. There are a lot of rare and mythics in this set. I will say, like,
yeah,
when I was opening packs, like, I was like, why do I have so many rares and mythics in these packs? Like, there were a lot. So
there are tons, and a lot of that too, cards from the big score. Those are all pretty much rares and mythics. There were people who were opening the maximum of rares and mythics in the play boosters, and there were the handful I played, but I found myself going for a lot of the uncommons. I just looked up one that I was trying to remember the name for, but Binding Negotiation in black.
Okay.
It's one in a black for a sorcery. It's got fantastic art on it. Plot removal.
Okay. Also just exile removal, which is kind of nice. There are a lot of those decks out there right now.
So I'm just thinking, like, my adventure deck, like, that's going to be target. That could be targeted by
it. I have a Rocco deck where I'm literally either myself or having other people play cards from exile. So, you know, someone could be playing this against me or against someone else since I'm putting other people's cards into exile for them to play later. So
there's a lot of fun in this. The new Lazav in Uncommon. Is kind of neat.
One of the cards that I really like, and some people were like, okay, so when I say some people, I mean people who don't play Commander were like, why does this card exist? Where is it? I just had it. Where did it go? The one that you can, it tutors for Command Tower.
Oh, the stake in green.
Yes. I'm going through green right now and I'm just like missing it. Where is it? Hello? Tower Winder.
Yes. Is it?
Yes. It's a.
It's a commander card.
Yes, it is a rare, but it's one in a green, 1/1 with Reach and Death Touch. When it enters the battlefield, you search your library and or graveyard for a card named Command Tower. Reveal it, put it into your hand. If you search your library this way, shuffle. This feels like a must include for like any commander deck playing green because you're tutoring for Command Tower, which gives you mana of any color that you need, and it comes in untapped. So unless you have this and Command Tower in your hand at the same time, which out of 99 cards is probably unlikely, like it could happen, which is unfortunate. But, you know, and even if that did happen, you still have a 1/1 death toucher on your board with reach. So like this feels like the new must include if you're playing a green commander deck.
Oh, for sure. That one's going to be solid for green, for ramp.
Yeah.
See where is it? I just saw it. Double down.
Yes. In
blue. That is fun. That was the only reason I went three color, I think, was because I pulled a double down and went, yep, this has got to go in there too. And then it got me to use Marchesa. But whenever you cast an outlaw spell, copy it.
Yeah. So outlaws in the new set are assassins, mercenaries, pirates, rogues, and warlocks. So you have a lot to choose from. And, you know, this not only became a good card for like within Thunder Junction, but also like outside of Thunder Junction. Like we just had a pirate deck happen in Ixalan. So it's like, you know, this is good for that because pirates are considered outlaws.
We have assassins with Assassin's Creed coming out. So many cards make mercenary tokens in Thunder Junction.
Yes.
Warlocks and rogues with the D&D sets. And it's the new party.
Yeah.
And mercenaries are fun too, because those are you can tap them to give +1/+0 to target creature at sorcery speed. What was funny though, speaking of outlaws, is Breaking News, the newspaper run, did Outlaw's Merriment as a reprint.
Mm-hmm.
And it, only one of the three is an actual outlaw.
That is kind of funny.
What's even funnier is my first opponent last night played it and was rolling, only rolled rogues. So was only getting outlaws out of it.
Interesting. Okay.
I missed an opportunity to do like one of those poker scenes from a Western where it's like, I think you might be cheating. But we had a big laugh about that. He ended up getting like three or four rogues, finally got something to remove it, and then he killed me.
Yeah, I feel like they did a really good job of, I don't even know how to explain this, but I feel like they did a really good job of synergizing the cards in this set. Mm-hmm. Some of the more recent sets we've seen out haven't really felt this synergized. I think that's why this set feels so strong and it feels so good and limited. Mm-hmm. Because I feel like the past couple of sets before this, it's almost like they tried to do too much.
I always thought that. The last pre-release I did was Lost Caverns.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that set. I love the lore. I love the art. I love how they put thought into the design, but I feel like it was trying to do a lot with new much and it just didn't work out. And like crafting, like, okay,
yeah.
Historically, like looking at the world you're building, yes, cool. Practicality, it doesn't really have a payoff for it. Exploration's cool, Discover's cool, and we've seen people have already worked on breaking that.
Yeah.
Then I look at Murders, which I kind of skipped just because of life and everything and timing. I still couldn't tell you how half of the mechanics work in it. And I love a murder mystery. I thought the story was fun. Loved everyone wearing hats. But it just was lost on me. And I wonder how much of that is actually going to return. I think the best thing they really did was kind of increase support for Surveil in it.
Mm-hmm.
But even that was really minimal.
The last set I felt like they had this sort of synergy to it was Lord of the Rings.
Mm-hmm.
And that set was wildly successful for many reasons. And part of that was because it was a Universes Beyond set. So, of course, you have people playing it who may not play Magic, but really love Lord of the Rings. But I think a part of also a big part of why it was wildly successful was also because it was so synergistic and it felt cohesive as a set. And Thunder Junction to me feels cohesive as a set. So while there are different mechanics, I feel like they can all still work together.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in some of the other sets like Murders and Ixalan, that also had a lot of different mechanics. They didn't necessarily always work well together.
Mm-hmm.
It felt like you kind of had to go in very different directions with things for like limited. Whereas like you said, it was a really fun limited environment. I think that's because you could really like do stuff.
Mm-hmm. Everything
no matter what colors
you
got. Yeah, exactly.
And it really, like you said, there's a cohesion to this. The cards understand the world they're a part of. So you could a third color and have it work somehow.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of potential if they kind of sort of, I guess, design package would be a way to kind of look at it.
Because
at the same time, it's very simple and it works. Like the big things were outlaws, plot, spree, and crime.
Yeah.
And crime is great because we finally have validation as commander players that people are committing crimes against us. And it's so much fun.
Target me, you're committing a crime.
Everyone was just laughing last night and having a blast and getting into it. And there were payoffs.
Yeah.
A villain. It also paid to kind of be the anti-hero, but you didn't need to do a lot. You didn't need to go super big. They captured the flavor of the genre. And you know, in a way, it's two genres because it's not just a Western. It's also a heist story.
Mm-hmm.
And they got the heist piece down. And that's one of the hardest things to do, moving pieces.
Yeah. So I'm interested to see kind of where they go from here. The next non-Universes Beyond set will be Bloomburrow, which is quite different. As we all know, there are no humans of any kind in the set. It will only be animals. So I'm just kind of hoping that they don't overdo it with that set. I could see them doing that. I could see them, again, trying to do too much because the theme is so, like, straightforward.
I'd be curious the design. I mean, we know the release timeline. I'd want to see kind of the design timeline based off of who was on the sets. Mm-hmm. To kind of see, did they design in the same order that things are being released or not? Because that could maybe have it. And I'm hoping it's straightforward.
Yeah. So I give this at like a 4 out of 5. It's still not like, you know, I'm not like, oh, this is the best set I've seen, you know, but I do think it is quite strong and quite synergistic. And I do like that.
Yeah. I'd probably have to give it a 4.5. Would give as a 5 perfect set in just the amount of time I've really spent playing Magic. But just from the bits I've played, I really enjoyed this. Like, we've talked about this set and all the sets coming up and how we were kind of like, I don't know, like, it's clever. Okay, Western, we both grew up and have been around the genre. It's not so much like a rite of passage. It's like a rite of survival to put up with it. And once I started looking at the cards and getting to play with them, though, it kind of changed my mind a little bit.
Yeah, I feel the same way. However, there are still some things I really don't like about it. Mm-hmm. And one of them, which a lot of people also have, you know, talked about on social media, is the new frames, the wanted poster frames, make it so difficult to figure out what the color of the card actually is. Mm-hmm. And it's almost kind of difficult to like figure out the mana cost. Like, it's just,
it's not good from an accessibility standpoint.
No.
I mean,
I saw someone, you know, who is colorblind say that they hate the new frames because they can't distinguish anything. Oh,
yeah, accessibility wise, like, I'm scrolling through them right now and I just stopped at Anguished Unmaking, which is in Orzhov. Mm-hmm. The white mana symbol just on any of these cards, but especially that one, because there's little subtle differences in the frame to kind of give a hint of the color, but not enough.
Yeah.
Is out a lot.
Yeah.
And then I just noticed Surgical Extraction, one of the cards in here. I hadn't seen them all. Mm-hmm. And it's so one Phyrexian mana. And that just kind of, if you're scrolling through these, you're not really going to.
They all look the same to me.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the cards are gorgeous. I won't, you know, they look great. The art style is fun. But yeah, they are.
I wouldn't choose to play like one of those over the normal version of the card in a deck I own. Just because I know I would have a difficult time reading it and figuring out what it is.
The blue ones in it are the cleanest to read. Mm. And the Azorius ones, you can tell enough in the, but the green is kind of washed out and it takes like a split second. I mean, some of the arguments people might say is, oh, you can tell by the tint on the art being in that color. It's like, well, if you're colorblind, you can't.
Exactly. Exactly. So
that makes this really hard. I mean, at least they have kind of the showcase version of the breaking news, but those are going to be a pain to find if you want to switch to them and to play them.
Yeah, so that's kind of like my one big thing that I really don't love about it. Like you said, the art on it is gorgeous. Mm-hmm. It's just, it's the frame. It's the framing. And I don't know, you know, if you combat the fact that it's less legible to make, you know, the mana symbols bigger, find a way to make them larger so people can see them better. Mm-hmm. But
I will say, oh, go ahead.
I was just going to say, it's just, they're so difficult to read.
I want to say they're a little better to read than the case files from Murders.
Those were also bad. Yes.
Those I think were definitely worse. I think we need
to get away from white frames. Mm-hmm. I think we need to not do that. The white special frames are not working.
what they could have done with these is shrunk it down to where at least up top, clear kind of set that's like normal printing, and then have the newspaper within it. It doesn't need to go And I think that would go a long way for helping people read.
Yeah, because I think a lot of the thing that's also throwing me off is, you know, it says the prosperity post at the top, mm-hmm. and it's as big as the card name. And so I think that also throws me off because my eyes immediately go to prosperity first. Mm-hmm. And so since they all say prosperity at the top, I think that's why they all just look the same, because that is where your mm-hmm. eye goes first. And so
I kept sorting back and forth last night, like, where is this one? And then realized, oh, it's right in front of me. And it was for that reason. Yeah, it's like, I love the creativity behind it. Mm-hmm. I love what they did with a lot of the really kind of cheesy jokes and puns tied to news articles, like the art. But mm-hmm. yeah, if I play any of these, it's going to be because it is like a special card, like maybe a mind break trap, because if I crack one of those, it would be great to crack one instead of.
Yeah.
We should maybe go on to the last portion of this, the big scorecards. Mm-hmm. The mysteries in the vault.
The mysteries in the vault.
The loot, as it were.
Yes. So this was supposed to be a separate set. But because Aftermath for All Will Be One, March of the Machines did so poorly, they decided to cut this as a separate Aftermath epilogue set and put it into the set.
I still think Aftermath was underrated.
Aftermath was underrated, but like people just, you know, didn't want to spend money on.
There were a lot. The best bet on that was getting a bundle, I think. And if they did a small set, like in a bundle based process only, I think that might work.
Yeah.
Because even in cracking all those packs, and I got a lot of duplication for some of the uncommons, but a lot of the uncommons that were in it were pretty good and at least usable. And I didn't need like 15 copies of that Azorius robot pterodactyl, but one would have made it to a DAC. And someone made an interesting point the other day. Mm-hmm. So the big score is only 30 cards. Yes. At rare and mythic. Mm-hmm. If this was going to be an epilogue, also.
They were probably reprints, would be my guess.
Yeah, I wonder if it would be reprints or if there is like a missing sheet of somewhere, because a 30 card set, that would have been a really, I'd say, failure if it was just 30 cards released in an epilogue set.
I bet there were uncommons and commons that were probably reprints. Either from Thunder Junction or from, you know, previous sets. Mm-hmm. That would be my guess. But we've learned our lesson. We're not doing epilogue sets anymore.
No, so, we're just doing beyond boosters now.
Yeah, so we threw these into Outlaws of Thunder Junction, which, again, we talked about, makes the packs feel like they have more rares and mythics than normal, which is because they do. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if you wanted to get that serotonin boost of cracking packs and getting lots of rares and mythics, this is probably a set to do it.
Oh, I won't lie. I was really happy when I was cracking my pool last night.
Yeah.
There was a lot of fun. I think just in my pre-release kit, I got two of the big scorecards, the mm-hmm. Grand Abolisher, the Oltec Matter Weaver. Mm-hmm. And someone else I played against was using the Generous Plunderer. I mean, the cards that I was seeing from this portion of fun.
Yeah. And they're worth some money. Like, you know, you go through on TCG mm-hmm. player and, you know, like, granted, we're still in pre-release, so prices, you know, obviously aren't, they'll still keep going down, but, you know, like, they're all decent.
Oh yeah. The, that raised foil Sword of Wealth and Power is somewhere around 240, I think. Mm-hmm. 250.
Yeah, I didn't pull any raised foils, so I don't exactly know how those feel like. I did notice, however, mm-hmm. that some of the foils did feel different, even if they weren't raised. Mm-hmm. I noticed in like a lot of the borderless foil cards felt almost texturized, but not like they were not raised foils, but like I felt like the foiling was different.
No, I noticed the same thing, and I just picked up I picked up a collector booster last night. Mm-hmm. And I know, like, even on the regular non-showcase foils, it kind of had that feel and almost that look to it.
Yeah.
It was subtle, but they look great. The foils for the breaking news, I thought looked really, they kind of reminded me of in the game Flesh and Blood, they have cold foils. Mm-hmm. And the way they do it is the foiling is only on specific elements of the art.
Yeah.
So it kind of gets, it makes everything pop. It hinders the curling a little, and it seemed to have kind of that style to it. But also, as we were talking, the borders and the frames on that are really bland, so there's not a whole lot to foil. A lot were curling right out of the packs, though.
Yeah. So, I don't know. They're all really good cards. I think that they did a good job with what would have been the Aftermath set.
I'm wondering what the equivalent's going to be, if there is one, for Bloomborough. If they had an Aftermath type set up.
I don't think so. I think they did it for this one because it was going to be the end of Kellen's current arc.
Yeah, it makes sense. The big score.
Yeah, but, you know, they did allude to Amalia and Kellen getting together and working together for something in the future.
I kind of want to know where that's going.
Yeah, so it's like the story's over, but it's not over.
We know everyone comes back at some point.
Yeah, I think that's why this had an Aftermath set. I think this was probably the only one that was going to have that for this year, especially with the timing of things, because now we have a bit of a gap of time before Modern Horizons 3 comes out. Mm-hmm. I believe this summer. So
yeah, we'll get Assassin's Creed in May, I think.
Let's see. No, Modern Horizons 3 comes out in June.
Modern Horizons.
And then Assassin's Creed comes out in July.
Oh, far away. And then we'll hit Bloomborough in August.
So I think the idea was there was going to be this gap of time between April and June. So there was going to be the Aftermath set kind of to hold us over between. So we have quite some time before the next set happens.
Which is a first.
It's like the first time we've really had like a couple months off.
That's going to feel really weird when it starts in a while. Settling in, because everyone's like, oh, 2 weeks, time for the next previews. And then it's going to be like, wait, we don't have anything. What do we do? It's like, oh, we play more games and build with what we have.
I wouldn't be surprised if they kind of, you know, keep releasing previews of sets before that time, just to kind of hold people over and keep them interested. And because once Modern Horizons hits, we go right back into it. So Modern Horizons is June, Assassin's Creed is July, Bloomborough's August, and then Duskborn is sometime in quarter four. So
MagicCon Amsterdam.
Which is in June, right? So that it coincides with Modern Horizons 3.
Yeah, I think that's when they... So it's going to be a fun and exciting summer.
Yes. I will likely be in Tacoma that weekend for Command Fest.
It'll be fun.
Yes. But yeah, I'm hoping I get to play some more Thunder Junction next weekend. I'm going to Command Fest San Francisco. Yeah, come see me. But hopefully I'll get to play some more Thunder Junction while I'm there. Maybe do some drafting. Maybe play some of the Commander decks a little bit more. We'll see.
I'm curious to hear how this is in draft. Seeing what you think.
I love drafting. And so it was kind of a bummer that I didn't get to do the early access event this time around, because that's usually where I get to, you know, that's mainly what I do when I play the early access events, is play, you know, draft or sealed. And I didn't get to do that this time around, unfortunately, due to my own schedule.
Work days, so, they're the worst. Yeah.
You know, darn work. Yeah.
Stupid cardboard habit we have to support.
Yeah. So I'm going to be going into it blind. Like, I won't know. I don't do research when I'm not one of those. I don't try hard when I play draft or limited, you know, like I don't research what the best, you know, pulls are. I don't research what colors I should be going. I just kind of go with what my heart tells me in the moment. So
I'm kind of see the previews and be like, oh, that's a really cool card, or I'll
crack a pack and go, oh, this is awesome. I remember seeing this, but
yep.
Analyze the meta and get into like,
no,
not for me. With the archetypes. It's like, I have enough like limited free time.
I already have to do that with World of Warcraft. So I already have to research all the things for that. It's so
priorities.
Yes. I can only do so much research. My brain can only hold so much information. Yeah, so it'll be interesting to kind of see more of the set, and I'll have to, you know, when I get back, we'll have to talk and on an episode or something about, you know, I'll give a little update on how.
You mean an epilogue episode?
An epilogue episode of
to tide you over.
Yes, of how Outlaws went for me. Since right now, really, all I have to go off of is playing Commander decks and seeing the cards on a screen and opening boxes, but it's different than playing with the cards. So did you wear any Western attire to pre-release yesterday?
No, I failed the assignment miserably. I had bandanas like ready to go with extras for people. I forgot them at home.
Oh no.
There were so many cowboy hats last night, too. It was such a great crowd. And at the end, we played at Hashtag Gaming down in Virginia. And they posted the photo of this on their Instagram. Mm-hmm. Everyone with a cowboy hat to do a group photo with the Oko cutout.
Oh, that's so good.
And my friend from work who took me over there shouts, don't hide the abs.
Yeah, there's I love when there's like a theme for the sets where like people get really into it and like dress up. I feel like that hasn't really happened since New Capenna. I feel like mm-hmm. people went all out for New Capenna. Like people were like, all right, let me get into my to my gear. People did a little bit for Karlov, for Murders of Karlov Manor, but it didn't feel like everyone was doing it. Whereas this set, it feels like everyone is dressing up for it, which I love. I mean, I cosplay, so I love dressing up, and I love seeing other people dress up.
I wish I had cowboy boots or something last night. Yeah. I should have just asked. They hung decor up to make it feel like a saloon almost with like chains and like there was also the acting as the judge and was going over everything. So like, instead of, all right, can I get an okay or a yes? He'd always, can I get a
yeehaw? Yeah, I will be dressing up as Yeehaw Liliana, Baseball Liliana, Yeehaw Baseball Liliana at a Command Fest San Francisco. So I also might be bringing an Overwatch cosplay. We'll see. I have to see if I can find it. I haven't worn my Overwatch Ashe cosplay. Ashe is another kind of, she's in Cassidy lore. They were like, I don't know, friends, I guess. People, I don't know. There's like a whole thing with them. Anyways, she's also Yeehaw. So I was like, oh, you know, maybe I'll bring her because I used to cosplay her, but I don't know where it is. So I'm going to have to do some digging in my closet to try to find it.
That'll be fun. And that'll be kind of a nice little parallel deep cut, especially after our discussion earlier. You have me like wanting to go dig into the lore of that now.
Yeah. It'll be kind of fun to see like who recognizes it and who's just kind of like, who are you? And, you know, and then some of the people get really excited when they see it. They'll be like, oh, you Ashe from Overwatch. You know, it just kind of depends on the person. So
I someone will get it. Hope someone does, because it's just got to be a great feeling.
Yeah. So it'll be good.
So everyone go see Nat next week.
Yes, please do. Let's play some Outlaws of Thunder Junction.
And with that, I think we'll be seeing everyone next time for another episode. Been great having you in our kitchen.
Let us know if you have a favorite flavor on socials.
We can be found on Twitter, YouTube, and everywhere your favorite podcasts are served up.
Just search for Flavor Profiles.
Our music is by Cormac Bluestone.
Thank you for listening.
I'm Matt.
And I'm Nat.
Until next time.
Until next time. Keep cooking, magic.
For those who like delicious flavor, now you can take us with you, even when you can't listen. If you like, you can go to our bonfire, newly minted, and pick up your very own Flavor Profiles t-shirt with our logo. We also have sweatshirts and hoodies in a variety of colors from Wooburg and more. Just in case you might be wanting to hit the farmer's market this weekend, we also added tote bags. Perfect for taking you from booth to booth, picking up everything delicious you want, or carrying around your deck boxes and all your fun purchases at the next Magic Con. I'd say pick it up while supplies last, but they'll be there forever, and they're comfy.